Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. Joining me is someone who made money on Upwork. I always thought Upwork was a place that you could get cheap workers to do quick design. Anyway, you're laughing at me, Evan, because how much money did you make on Upwork?
Over $1 million.
Over what period of time?
We broke $1 million in about 2.25 years.
Okay. You know, I doubted it when someone on your team sent that over to me. I said, look, I found researcher says he didn't do it. And they said, actually, he has to do it under, I think you have to do it under your personal name, not your business name, or vice versa. Do you remember which one it was?
Oh, it was under my personal name. Yeah.
That's so they corrected me. I looked at it and I said, oh, this is pretty freaking, who knew that this could be possible? Anyway, the reason that I invited him here is to find out how he did that, how he was able to go from on a platform like Upwork and generate not just money for himself, but also use it to build his business. Evan Fisher runs Unicorn Business Plans. They create pitch decks, business plans, and financial models. Basically, he says everything you need to go out and raise money. Yes, they do it on some of these freelancer networks, but it seems like the majority of your business right now, Evan, is on your own site, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of transitioned really, really fast from where we were previously really, really heavy on freelance type of sites and whatnot, because that's just where the earlier stage work was. We transitioned and now it's just gotten crazy, crazy into a huge referral flow and a lot of just direct people reaching out saying, hey, I found you guys, heard about you from some VC or investor or whatever. And like, let's talk. So yeah.
I'm gonna have to ask you, who needs a business plan anymore? And if somebody can't write their, oh, I saw your eyes blink as I said that. You don't like, we're gonna get into these questions in a moment. First, I've got to say that this interview is sponsored by two phenomenal companies. The first, if you're doing any kind of online marketing, you need SEMrush. They're gonna let you use their software for free if you go to mixergy.com/SEMrush. And second, if you want to get better leads, more qualified leads, more of them, you need to know about Outgrow. I'm going to tell you later why you should go to outgrow.co/mixergy. But first, Evan, who needs a business plan anymore? I thought we're living in a world of create a minimum viable product. That is your business plan. Tell us where you're going. That is your business plan. Keep it to like a few slides, but mostly we want to see the product. Who needs a business plan?
Short answer, you know, everybody and nobody. So basically, the nobody on this end of the equation is nobody as far as founders are concerned. You can grow a business. Anybody can grow a business off of the back of nothing. I mean, look at freelance platform. You can grow a business off of the back of nothing. Why do you need a business plan? As long as you know what you're doing and which way you're going, then what founder really and truly needs it? But when you are looking for serious capital, then you have to have it. And when I say serious capital, I'm talking, the sort of rule of thumb is like 5 million. When you get sort of in that area of between 2 and 5 million and you're talking about serious check size and whatnot, that's generally when investors are going to start to say, okay, I need more than just 10 pages on this, because otherwise you're leaving a lot kind of open to discussion and or chance, like, am I rolling the dice here? So you are going to get asked for a more detailed look at like what's under the hood and how does it work and why is everything that you've got proprietary, better, faster, more profitable? Like, what is it that you've got and how are each of the things going to be built out? So,
Evan, shouldn't a company be able to do that themselves if they're asking for that much money? If they should be counted on to manage that money well, shouldn't they be able to create their own business plan to express themselves?
Yes.
Are you going to say yes and no again?
No, they should be able to. They should be able to. But the fact of the matter is, especially in like complex businesses, and think things like biotech, where you've got a lot of, you know, formulas and molecules and all different things going on, and you've got FDA over here and whatnot, it's complicated, right? It's complicated. And it's about the communication in an extremely, extremely clear fashion. And so the days of old where it's like, okay, let's write 60 pages and just throw it on a Word document, whatever, and put some headings in there and maybe intersperse some, you know, what that is dead, that's gone. And so
okay.
The expectation is get me through it faster. Tell it to me clearly, make it look as if your business, you know, you have spent the time and energy and whatnot that you not only can sell me as an investor, but that you can sell your clients too, and prove that to me in the same sentence. So weave it all together. And that's kind of a tall order for a lot of founders whose skill sets may be in something completely different. Like a lot of people are expert in what they do, but not in raising capital.
What about on the younger side? So a newer business, would they, if they're raising a seed round or something a little bit, let's say $1 million, would they need Unicorn? And we should get into how you built this business and where your revenue is, but I want to understand the business a little bit better first.
We operate a lot in the when you're taking that next step. So from one step change to another. And typically that is when you go from, you know, friends and family and, you know, your own internal contacts and stuff like that into, okay, now we're going after VCs, totally different ballgame, totally different level of expectations of what you need to provide and how you need to go about the process. And, you know, yes, $1 million is really, it's very borderline. So it kind of depends on the individual circumstances. For example, some founders that are repeat founders that just, they know their weaknesses and they're like, okay, listen, I know what I don't know. And I know that I'm not good at telling a story very clearly. And this is typically in like the sort of, I'm comfortable pitching and I'm comfortable talking about the business, but I can't weave it together anywhere near as well as you guys can. And furthermore, I don't have the time. So that's where we look at, you know, businesses that are raising around about, you know, a million, where there's like a multi-time founder and whatnot. But generally with us, it sort of absolutely starts around 2 million. Like if you're raising less than 2 million, and you don't have a, another exit, or, you know, you were maybe senior running one of these, but you know, a previously, exited business, then it's probably not going to be that great of a fit because the stakes are just not, you know, not right for what we're geared for, really.
Okay. All right. I'm with you. I'm going to come back and ask, is this the type of clientele that is on Upwork? But we'll get to that in a moment. Let's get to know you a little bit better. You're a guy, you told our producer, I was always up before everyone else in my family, before the other kids. I was always a hard worker. You always seemed to have a job. Why did you get up before all the other kids in your family?
Honestly, because I was in the basement and I didn't know when the alarm was going off.
You grew up in the basement? I mean, lived in the basement? No.
Yes. Yeah.
I wanted to be able to do that. It's like having your own apartment in your own house, right?
It's like your own cave. You know, you can like hide out there and
yeah.
It's like your little secret spot. But no, I don't know. I guess I was always a little bit different from everybody else. I don't know why, but kind of independent view. And for me, it was just always a drive of like, I wanted to go into the financial sector. I wanted to, you know, make a success of something. And that kind of played through into sort of every step of my career, where a lot of people would have maybe started working, you know, later on in life, you know, when you get to like mid-teens and whatnot.
Yeah.
As soon as I turned 13, got a job, also got fired from that job, but I did get a job after that. And
you're talking about the KFC job. It's kind of interesting. I wanted to get a job at the local fast food place by my house just to get some money, understand how they're growing. Like, what is it about this business that makes it work so well in all these different states? I couldn't do it at 10 and I wanted to, couldn't do it at 11 or 12. I think I had to wait till 13. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I might've even need to get some kind of paperwork to show them that I was eligible to work. That's what it was for you. You were waiting for the day to be able to do it.
Exact same thing. Yeah. I mean, realistically it was that. I mean, I was the kid who was shoveling snow since like what, 8 years old. So I don't know, maybe it's like an entrepreneurial thing. Maybe it was
for me,
like,
it was inborn. Was it for you too? Were you born with it? Is this Lady Gaga, I was born this way?
I don't know. I'm not that kid who was like, you know, you always see these things of like, yeah, magical kid makes, I don't know, $90,000.
Yeah.
You know, he's 7 years old. And I'm like, that wasn't me. You know, good for the kid. But that.
So what was you? I was a kid, like, who was admiring that, wanting to be that, and waiting to bust through to more. That was right. So it's not that we were doing it. We wanted to. For me, part of it was I was born this way. The other part was the influences. I would go to the library and read biographies of people who'd made it big and think, you know what? They always start. Me that's too. What it was for you. Who was it? Who are some of the people that you used to read about?
Oh, 100% Ben Franklin. Walter Isaacson's Ben Franklin. Favorite book ever. Yeah. Steve Jobs, obviously same author, Isaacson, Steve Jobs. And
what was it about Benjamin Franklin that made you want to be like him?
Worldly guy, diplomat, you know, was widely, widely respected. But most importantly, you know, practical, thrifty, and clever. Yeah. I really liked how cleverly, he would write him and Mark Twain. So that was really the major like draw for me of like how somebody, you know, hundreds of years ago was basically doing the same thing that we're now doing today. For example, you know, he would put an article in his paper, and just to drum up some sort of controversy, he would pen the article that would be, you know, in the pen name of somebody. And the following week, he'd pen another counterpoint article from somebody else, you know, opinion column, and, you know, sort of get into a
it's it, on the internet, it's called battle. Creating sock puppets, these fake characters, and then they fight each other. And he was doing that. And you like that. What about
and
any
he
business
owned
people?
The paper.
Sorry?
And he owned the
and he
paper.
Owned the paper. Right. So the more you're reading about the controversy, the more he's getting paid. Okay. I get it. Why did you then get fired? Here's a guy, I'm looking at a kid, eager to get a job, finally gets a job. How many hours were you working? You told Ari 20 to 30 hours a week?
I mean, not officially, according to...
Wow.
But no, it was a pretty substantial part-time job when I was there. But I don't know. It was maybe a tension of like, I couldn't do the things that somebody else was telling me to do, and just continue to pay attention to what it is that they wanted me to do. I was never a really great employee.
Mm-hmm. Because, well, so you would go in there, you had this job, 20 to 30 hours, what would you do that would get you fired?
I mean, I would end up in the back, like trying to practice my Spanish with some of the guys that worked there. It was, you know, purely for entertainment and like bettering myself. And it's like, okay, why are you not working the register? Whoops. We had customers.
And you had people skills enough to feel comfortable as a teenager talking to adults in a foreign language. I was too shy at that point to talk to them.
Yeah, it never, I don't know. Maybe this is like one of those things where you never see the difference in between adult and child. I mean, I never felt the difference between like myself and someone who's like 50 years my senior. We're peers. It's just, you've been around longer than me. There's probably a lot that I can learn from you. And so why would we not speak, you know?
Okay, what about this? The other problem that I had, Evan, was I found that people weren't rational, or I didn't understand the rationale behind what they did until I read Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yep.
And then he says the operating system, because they would do these irrational things that weren't even in their best interest. And I go, how do I even talk to someone like this? And then Dale Carnegie starts off by explaining the ego. And he says, people are generally guided by their sense of self. Mm-hmm. And I realize, oh, so no wonder people are making bad long-term decisions, because in the short term, it makes them feel good about themselves. No wonder you have to remember somebody's name. It literally doesn't matter, right? I could just keep talking to you and say hi and just talk to you. But if I say the name Evan, I notice when I talk to my guests, their ears perk up or their eyes perk up, or there's a thing that I feel, because we feel good hearing our name. Anyway, Dale Carnegie gave me that, but I didn't get it until 18. At 13, I couldn't do it. How did you at 13 be able to talk to these adults?
I mean, I don't
just
know.
Just wasn't a thing for you.
Yeah, it was never like some mental block for me to be able to speak to other people.
All
so
right.
I don't know, just never had that problem. It was just like an individual thing. I mean, but that sort of ended up biting me, because when I'm being told to do one thing and not doing it, and
yeah,
spending time kind of as I see fit, then, you know, yes, great for entrepreneurship and great for, you know, personal skill building. And I guess that's where the ego comes in. But not so great for when you're being told to do something.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, if you saw me wipe my nose, it's because there's so much freaking smoke in the air here in San Francisco. I'm still looking out the window. I'm not going to take the laptop out the window for you to see, because last time I did it, we lost the connection for a moment. It's terrible. Where are you? Where in the world?
I shouldn't laugh because it's probably extremely scary. So just like one,
I'm number not one, scared. Stay I'm safe, disturbed. Andrew. It's so eerie. Dude, it is pitch black out the window, but weird, when I open the door here, the sky is red. And so I forgot to shut the window because I wanted some air. It felt a little cool, but now I'm sensing it. It's definitely throwing me off. Not breathing very well.
But there's no like fires nearby.
No, as I was telling my kids and I on the drive to their elementary school bubble and preschool bubble.
Yeah.
I said, we're living in San Francisco. The fire would have to jump over that bay in order to get to us. We're pretty well insulated from that. Okay. Yeah.
Luckily, you're in the right place. And like, to answer your question, yeah, I'm in Atlanta. So a little bit on the other side of that.
Yeah, you guys are doing well with this. There's no natural catastrophes going on right now there. All right. You end up going to Bear Stearns. What was it as a kid that you saw at Bear Stearns? And we're going to get to how you built up this business. I know I'm taking some time with it, but I just freaking love business. So talk to me about where your love for finance came.
Yeah, it was one of those weird things. Like I had a mind for numbers and just knew that I wanted to be in the financial sector, because I thought that's where the money is made and everything, since I was a teenager. And so in preparation for that, I started working at a bank. Literally the day that I was, I want to say 16, the youngest that any bank would hire, the day that I was six was the day that I put in my application and started work, like literally from that week. And so when I was looking at schools of where should I go to college and whatnot, there was this, let's call it like a bring your child to work day kind of thing. And neither of my parents worked there, but it was like, you know, allow kids to come in and check it out. Right. And so one of the places that we could go to was, of all places, Bear Stearns. And I felt like it was, if you've ever seen the film, what's it called? I want to say, The Big Short, right? Where they go and check out Lehman Brothers, just, you know, the trading floor. Or Wolf of Wall Street, where he gets in there and he's like, man, it was like mainlining adrenaline. I instantly was hooked. That was me as like a little, you know, teenager looking around and hearing traders shout into the phones. And I'm like, I want to do that. And so I just did everything that I could. So I started asking the traders, I'm like, where do I go to school to get here? And so they ended up giving me a couple of recommendations. I ended up going to one of them, funny enough. And so that was like always in my head as that's what I'm going to do after school, after I get out of college. And all right. None of that.
We're going to get into how you ended up in Geneva and then from there, how you ended up on Upwork. But first, I've got to tell you about my first company, Outgrow. I feel like before this interview started, I might have made you feel uncomfortable because I said, dude, people come to your website, they hit the button and they go directly to your calendar. And you said, yeah, that's how we do things. Let me suggest a better way. Tell me what you think of this. You offer pitch decks, business plans, what else?
Financial models, pretty much everything in the capital raise pack that you need to go out and raise, you know, $5, $50, $100 million.
And it's a different price depending on what people need for their business plan. Okay.
100%.
Right. Imagine this. Imagine instead of that button that gets people to schedule a call with you, or maybe in addition to it, you allow people to get a price for the investment, the material they need to raise money, right? So they come to your site, they have you have a separate page where they say, what do I need? Pitch deck, business plan, et cetera. And you describe what the difference is. What do I need in my business plan? How far along is my business? Answer a few questions. 5-7 questions. You're smiling as I'm saying this. What are you thinking as I'm saying this? Talk to me, Evan.
I'm thinking I have literally built the exact same thing in type form, and it was a super pain in the ass to try and build myself. Yep. And if I had known about this, I mean, it would have been job done.
This is the beautiful thing about Outgrow is it does the math. All these other things are about forms with a little bit if then that's a pain. This will do the math. Then you create the page, the resource, and it doesn't just become a good way for your clients to understand, is this a good fit for me or not? But it becomes a way for people to say to their friends, I know you're spending a lot of time writing a business plan right now. Just go check this out. Get a price of what it would cost you to do this. And for you, Evan, anyone who went through it, even before they got their results, you could get their contact information so you could follow up with them and say, I saw that you went through our material. Here's what you might also want to know. Or can I send you a pitch deck to give you a sample of what we're talking about? Can I show you a business plan? Can I introduce you to one of our clients? And you're basically qualifying them because they're answering questions themselves. That is the beautiful part of Outgrow. These guys created it for themselves. It helped them get more leads because people are starting to pass around the form that they created for themselves, this calculator that they did. I said, you know what? This could be our SaaS. Why don't we just do it? So on the side, they created the SaaS, Outgrow. It became super huge. And now they're advertising on Mixergy. And anyone who's listening to me can get to use this for free. All you have to do is go to outgrow.co/Mixergy. You could do cute quizzes, calculators, all this stuff that will, yes, get you more leads, yes, go viral, but also help you qualify so that you know who the right person to talk to is. It's available to you for free. They're experimenting. I think they bought 3 ads and I might have overshot it, Evan. I might have given more ads than they paid for already. But here's the thing. They paid for 3 ads. They said, Andrew, space it out over 3 months. I go, guys, I get excited. I'm not talking here because somebody put stuff in front of me. The only ad I ever recorded based on what someone put in front of me was LinkedIn. They didn't know who I was. They said, let's give it a shot. I can't help it. I'm still excited about Outgrow. So I'm recording this ad and we may not end up getting paid for it, but I'm psyched about it. That's what I like.
I think
about.
It's awesome. I personally think it's awesome, right? Like no BS. I think it's awesome.
Good.
And I think we're going to use it too, by the way.
And use the free URL, outgrow.co/Mixergy.
All right.
You end up in Geneva in investment banking. What did you do there?
I mean, standard investment banking stuff. Writing business plans, doing a bit of pitch decks, basically buying and selling companies, cross-border transactions, stuff of that nature.
Okay. And then how does that lead you to creating a business for yourself? You're going in there. Can you give me an example of a client that you worked on or a project that you worked on?
I'm trying to think of one. Okay. Yeah. Avio, Italian aerospace company. I believe that they ended up after we ended up working with them. Italian aerospace company buys it was the other way around. Italian aerospace company sells a piece of their operation to a Spanish aircraft engine maintenance organization. So we're doing like all cross-border deals, all country to country, which it was perfect for me because I'm like a languages guy, right? And so we were doing all sorts of stuff, a lot in aviation, aerospace, defense, stuff like that. And everything from one country to another, a lot of like cross-cultural things. So there's a lot of like interpersonal stuff that you had to think about in all those deals that we ended up doing.
You told our producer, I created a pitch deck. My boss didn't give me guidance through it. I just had to kind of figure it out.
Not that exactly. It was sort of trial by fire, in a lot of what we did, just because we, through the course of when I was working there, it was a very like flat organization. And so there wasn't like a sort of mentorship system that you might get in a Wall Street bank or something like that. So it was a lot of, you know, learn by doing. And when you just have to sort of, you know, go ahead and figure it out, then, you have to see what else is working in other places, see what's working for other people. And basically just figure out what works. And a lot of it sort of, you know, started to click that, okay, maybe there's something in this. which was after after I finished working with the bank. One of the former clients of the bank, who had raised £4 million, it was a UK company and whatnot. I ended up working with them as a consultant, and so I had prepared the materials for them in the past, and so I knew the business and everything. And basically, they came back to me while I was consulting for them, and they said, "Okay, hey, listen, can you do our documents again, because we're going to raise again?" And it was not 4 million anymore, it was like 40 million. So the sort of guiding, let's say the guiding instruction at that point was a little bit different. It wasn't, just do it and put it together. It was, we want something very, very specific. So, this is a media company and they've spent a lot of money on their image. They spent a lot of money on, making sure that they present themselves properly. And it was like, listen, if it's black and white words on a page, the sort of traditional business plan, pitch, it wasn't going to get the job done. And so the sort of, package was, we want to see, an extremely punchy story. We want all of the financial information that we're going to need and none of the, bull crap that's going to throw us off track in an investor meeting. And we want the entire package to look absolutely beautiful and wonderful and tied up with a little bow on it. And that was a sort of like light bulb moment of like, wow, that actually makes sense. I don't understand why more people aren't doing that. And from there, that sort of sparked something in like the back of my mind. And it really started to grow when other clients of mine started approaching me and saying like, hey, listen, we met, 3 years ago or something at some event or whatever. Hey, can you put together our deck too? Because we saw, the work that you put together, and we want that too. We want that same package. Can you do that for us? And that's when I was like, wow, maybe there's an actual business in this. Maybe, maybe we can do something out of it.
Let me see if I'm following. This, the investment bank was Barron's Financial Services, boutique investment bank. You were in Geneva. For them, you were creating pitch decks, right? For companies often that were public.
On behalf of clients that would be raising capital or trying to sell their business, okay. Things of that nature.
And for the most part, it was the staid stuff that we would expect. If we look at an S1 when it comes out and we just look at the PDF, it seems like what you're saying is it was like that.
Not really.
Functional, but no, then what?
Yeah, I would say like in general, what gets produced out of a lot of investment banks is just, it's good, but what tends to happen is, you end up using the same template over and over and over again. It doesn't look good. It's not punchy. It's and a lot of like white space consulting type of stuff.
Okay.
And that doesn't really embody, the person who's going to be pitching this business. So
okay.
What ends up happening is you've got someone who is representing a business in a lot of cases that they are external, they are, maybe an analyst or an associate or a vice president of a bank who is paid to go out and market this business. And they, sort of stay within the box that they have learned, this is what's worked in the past for us.
Okay.
But a lot more of what's happening these days is founders are just going out, themselves on their own. And they need to be able to approach investors on their own. Okay. And have all of that strategy and all of the, let's say, know-how woven into that, but in a way that also makes them look extremely good as they actually are as a company.
And this was you realizing this for one client or the client asking you to do it for them?
It was a little column A, little column B. So the client told me those words, I wanted to be this, that, and the other. And I want that all
meaning,
perfectly
be
put
on
together.
Brand. Don't just give me the usual description.
On brand.
On brand. Yes. So you start working on that. Give me an example of what it means to be on brand. What did you do that was a little different that you still remember?
So lot more imagery than what you're going to see on a pitch.
Photos.
Yes, very much so. A lot more visual, a lot more, let's explain it to you. A picture says 1,000 words, right?
Yeah.
And so, as far as content goes, it's going to be a lot easier to explain, this is what we do. And if I show a picture, if I show you a picture and I say, we build that.
Right.
Then instantly you're going to know, okay, yeah, I get it. I've seen that before. Versus if I try and describe to you, you know, what an apple is, but you've never seen an apple, then that's kind of hard. So it's a lot more storytelling, a lot more strategy built into how those meetings go, because a lot of times it ends up being the founder who's closing the deal anyway. The intermediary is the one who is just making an introduction.
But you know what, I know what you mean about an image. I was pitched this company, ChargerSpot, for a while for doing interviews, and it seemed familiar. I didn't get it exactly. Then I saw a picture of it and I said, oh, I've seen these cubbies at Target. They just didn't have the branding ChargerSpot prominent. It was Target's design, right? And that's where you go and you put your phone. Now I get it. That one image helped me understand it. So that's what you're talking about. Making it really clear through pictures. You understood it. Your mom comes to you. I just banged the microphone. Your mom comes to you and she says, I heard about this thing called Upwork. Is your mom a technical person? Is she someone who's usually in the know? Is that how she discovered Upwork? I'm feeling like our connection is losing a little bit.
I think she actually picked up on it. We good?
We're good. Yeah. Go for it.
Okay. So I think that she had picked up on it originally from my brother had maybe either found a contractor on there or was contracting and doing a little bit of work. They're sort of brainiac tech guys, my brothers. But she had mentioned it to me and she was like, hey, maybe this is something that you guys, you know, want to check out. And I was like, I don't know like what the clientele is going to look like, but I have no idea. So, but I said, if I'm going to do it, I want to do it right. And I want to do it well. And honestly, I want to be number one because it's like sort of a philosophy thing. Right. So got started, got kicked off and it became a pretty solid distribution avenue for us, to just grow off the back of
to get
very early on.
To pay you to create business plans. Right. So the thing that I wonder as I'm hearing this is, why didn't you think that Upwork was beneath you? Upwork was seen as this place to go get cheap design, cheap development work done, not care about the people who do the work. You're a guy who aspired to greatness, who read about Benjamin Franklin, who was in Geneva at a finance company, investment banking. You're finally there. Now you go to Upwork. Why didn't you see it as being beneath you?
It wasn't so much that it was beneath me. I just didn't realize that had, you know, so much power of the network as it actually did. I didn't know that freelance was a thing, to be honest. I didn't know that
so that any of the negative connotations, any of the negative connotations that other people would have had, you just didn't have it connected with it. You just said, hey, this is a place where I can go and get business. Let's just go try it. That's what it was.
Yeah. Let's go check it out and find out. I also, I did understand that some of the freelance platforms out there are just, you know, not super like high ticket in terms of clientele, because to be honest, what we're doing is not cheap. And so it requires that you have a budget. And, you know, if that budget is like $500 to do something, that's not going to work for what we do even remotely. Right.
Yeah.
So it became clear like very early on, maybe if it hadn't been for us being able to be successful in like the first 3, 4, 6 months in doing that, then I don't think that we would have continued it worked.
What did you charge for a business plan in that first couple of months?
Oh my gosh. In the beginning, honestly, that was like a sort of hand to mouth, like let's try and figure it out. That was let's bootstrap mode. And so I was like, okay, let's try this out. And let's, in spite of all whatever common wisdom of like, don't start with doing something for cheap, I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do it for cheap. So cheap. Just for like the reviews and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
review-driven platforms and everything. So the first one that I ever did and the last one that I ever did was at $35 an hour.
Whoa.
I mean, that was the cheapest I could ever, ever imagine.
So how much did you get for a business plan at $35 an hour?
Say again?
How much did you get for a full business plan at $35 an hour?
It wasn't just a business plan. It was a bunch of different things. But overall, that client probably ended up somewhere around $8,000 to $10,000 worth of spend.
Okay, that's not bad.
I know. That was the whole thing. I was like, wait, they actually have a budget? Is this thing for real? It's not just like individual people. It's actual companies.
So it started with $35 an hour. What did they expect to get for $35 an hour?
It was a lot of financial modeling, a lot of totally unscalable stuff that I just did, you know, on my own, lonesome, whatever. But yeah, it was like, that was the start. That was the start of, wow, they're actually, you know, maybe some scope in here. And, you know, after that, it was just like, okay, well, we're building on reviews. We're building on successful work. We're building on, it was always about reputation. Reputation always over above anything else. If it's going to be a bad fit and I can't say I'm going to knock this out of the fucking park for you, then we're just like not going to do whatever it is that needs to be done. If it's not a perfect fit, then no way, right? But by, I guess by you know, vetting our way through and making sure that reputation stayed like perfectly intact, we ended up being able to just raise and raise and raise and raise and raise and just do more and better for people. And it ended up just paying huge, huge dividends. And we were able to actually build a solid business off the back of that.
And it was you for a long time on your own. Am I right? For how long?
No, actually it became like it snowballed. That's why I said if it hadn't been successful early on, then there's no way we would have continued like on that path. So what ended up happening was once the first one was locked in and it was like, yeah, excellent job, fantastic work, et cetera, then it just sort of snowballed. And we started getting a lot more people coming back to us or, you know, responding to when we would put something out there. And yeah, it grew and grew. And so we added people just successively. I think we probably brought in 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 people within the space of the first 6 to 9 months.
To do what? Who were the first people that you brought in?
It was basically like break up the job into different buckets. So it would be the writing aspect of it, the strategy aspect of it, project management, bookkeeping, design. I mean, those were the real major pieces that we had to solve for and figure out how is this system, how can we make this work in a way that is going to end up with just outstanding results for the person on the other end.
How did you hire? What worked for you in the beginning?
I mean, the most important was always making sure that there was a perfect fit as far as alignment. Mm-hmm. And there's two things that I think are most important in looking for in somebody that you're going to work with. And you know how the old adage goes, if you wouldn't have them around for a lifetime, don't keep them around for a day. Well, that's how we always looked at it. And it's honestly, it's like, if you can deliver excellence consistently, and you can deliver things on time, I don't care if you are on a beach in Fiji, if that's where you do your best work and you've got a solid Wi-Fi connection, dude, do it. Like that's where you should be. If that's your element, be okay. There. So we're totally remote and we always have been, probably always will be, just because that's what works. And when people have total flexibility, it's awesome.
Give me a tip. One tip for how you got, how you hired people, how you hired right in the beginning.
Brown M&Ms.
What do you mean?
You know that story about
Brown M&Ms? Tell the story for people who don't know. Was it Van Halen who did this?
Yeah, I think it was Van Halen. It was either Van Halen or Iron Maiden. I always forget.
Not Iron Maiden.
Yeah, basically the story was that they used a vetting mechanism of brown M&Ms as like a super hidden buried thing in this long ass rider of like 80 pages. Whenever they booked a show, then there would be a tiny little, you know, clause in there that says we want M&Ms in our dressing room, but no brown M&Ms whatsoever. If you have any brown M&Ms in this, you know, little bowl in our dressing room, if there's a single brown M&M in there, the contract is null and void and we are taking the money and walking. And the whole reason for that was because I want to say David Lee Roth, one time he goes on stage and, you know, this is a long, thick contract because these are very, very, you know, deep and intricate productions, right? And that's why the contract is so long. You have to follow it to a T. And so he went on stage at one point and it said like, hook up the electric to this power outlet, not that one. And he grabs the microphone and electrocutes himself, almost gets killed. And so from then on, if there were brown M&Ms in the dressing room when they walked in there, then they were not playing that show that night because the stage is probably freaking unsafe. So if you see that as a tiny little marker of, you know, for vetting, it's like the single most effective thing. Basically, it's if you want to work with us, then the first words from your response should be brown M&Ms. And then we know that you've paid attention, you care about the details, and you are listening.
What's your version of brown M&Ms?
So,
you don't want to reveal it because people know?
I love revealing it. I love revealing it for the people who know and the people that care. I love you because it's wonderful when people just understand that there are probably 80% of the people out there just are not following directions. But those that do, we love working with them because they follow a process. And the whole thing about what we do is people are successful when they can follow a process. And so our little secret phrases are use the force. And the other like major vetting thing that we use is before a call, you better have two things prepared. You better have a 60-second pitch prepared and keep it under 60 seconds and a good joke. So start us off with a joke.
And so you tell anyone who you're going to hire, have these two things prepared. If they don't have it prepared, if they go over.
And clients. That's how we vet clients.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You want a client to have a 60-second pitch.
We vet clients. Yes.
What's the deal then with the force? How do you get them to say the phrase, use the force?
So there's a little like Easter egg trail in when you book a call, then what's going to happen next is you're going to get a couple of messages along the way. And there's a little Easter egg trail in there that leads to a certain article that was, you know, posted once upon a time by me of why we vet people and, you know, the whole theory behind it of like, limited resources and we only want to work with great people and so on. Basically, that leads you to the article where it says, if you use the words, use the force, then you're getting a discount with us. And you're the only people apart from veterans and first responders that are going to get a discount with us.
And you do that to know that they've paid attention to the process, got it, and they're going to be easier for you to work with. All right. I'm glad I asked. Let me talk about my second sponsor because I think this is another one that I'm going to pitch to you, Evan.
Pitch it.
I looked you up also. Not only did I look you up on Upwork and TopTal, where you're doing really well, I also looked you up to just see, do you have any traffic? SimilarWeb is showing that you guys have, tell me if I'm wrong, maybe I did something wrong here. You seem to have hardly any traffic to your site. Am I right?
Yep.
You don't have much content on your site. I think that's going to be an issue for you. I think as much as you're getting business from Upwork, you have so much expertise from having created business plans, pitch decks, from talking to customers. This one little tip is incredibly helpful for businesses to know. If you have a couple of other tips that you could write about of how to raise money, how to talk to investors, how to present yourself, how to weed out people you don't want to do business with, every one of them could be a potential blog post. But how do you know what to write about? How do you know what's going to pay off? Well, that's where SEMrush comes in. It's a whole set of marketing tools that you can get to allow you to figure out how to market well. And so I reached out to my audience. I said, how are you guys using it today? Ruben Metcalf, who I've known for years, said, I wanted to know what works. I didn't want to figure everything out by myself. And so he discovered that there was someone in South Africa who was running a business very similar to the one that he was working on. He said, let's see what's working out for that guy. It turns out they're both going after lawyers, but Ruben was going after lawyers who were there. The other company was going after lawyers who were about to become lawyers. What articles did they need? What are they reading about? Ruben said, that's what we should be doing too. Started doing something similar in the US, growing his business, because what he did was a little bit of market research on somebody who was in a similar business. Evan, you could do the same thing. There are people who do business plans. There are also people who just work with your clients in one way or the other, or work with people who are about to be your clients in one way or the other. You do some research on them on SEMrush. I'm going to let you use their software for free. And it's going to show you these aha moments. And you're going to say, of course I can write that. And since you're a competitive person, they're going to show you what people who are, if you're going after a phrase to rank in Google, they're going to show you what others are doing to capture that phrase, how they're outranking everyone else. And you could say, I think I could beat them and do it. Or I think I'm never going to beat them. Let's just move on to simpler terms. All right, here it is. SEMrush is one of these things that you have to actually try to understand what it is. You can't just hear it. You can't see bullet points. You have to just try it and go, oh, you know what? I get it now. It's kind of like kombucha. You tell someone kombucha is this foul tasting thing and they don't understand why people like it. You taste it and they realize, oh, you know what? Maybe I do kind of like it. Or maybe I don't like it. A lot of people don't like kombucha. The only way to know it is to try it, and I'm going to let you use it for free. Try it, get results for yourself, see how it works, improve your business. If you don't like it, you cancel. If you do like it, you can still cancel. They're not going to charge you anything, because if you use my special URL, they won't even take your credit card. I can tell by looking at Evan's face that I'm going too long with this ad, so I'm going to close it out by saying
Totally into it. Really? I'm totally into it.
I could just record this. I don't know how guys like Tim Ferriss and Joe Rogan, they record their commercials. Some of their ads go on for 5 freaking minutes. And they're just talking into a mic. I wish that I can't do that. I need to see someone's face to know whether I'm still on it or not.
Screw it. Do it live.
Let's close it out. Here it is. If you want to use it, I didn't even give them a chance to create a landing page. I just want to show them how effective this ad will be for their audience, because I know this will be useful for you. All you have to do is go to mixergy.com/SEMrush. We will redirect you to the right place. That is Mixergy. That's my site, mixergy.com/SEMrush. Mixergy.com/SEMrush. Speaking of rush, boy, did I rush through that ad. All right. Am I too fast of a talker for you? Like, I feel like maybe...
No.
I feel like our energies are a little bit off. You come across as a very polished person. Your freaking mic is positioned at the exact spot. Look at me. I'm in my house. I've got the shadow behind me. It's driving me freaking nuts because I'm not recording at the office. This shadow, I want to punch the wall because of it. You have no shadow behind you. You have a mic with a pop filter, and I don't know what that sleeve is on top of it. It might be redundant. It might be like belts and suspenders on it. You got a shirt that's nicely pressed. I'm evaluating the whole thing. And meanwhile, I'm the guy who's the pro at this. You're the person who's just talking to customers.
Okay, let's talk about this.
Yes.
I will tell you, so since we're recording this on Zoom, I do Zoom. We're 100% remote, and we have been for years and years and years. I've literally taken like 3 in-person meetings in the past 4 years, right? So I do Zoom all day long. Sometimes I'm on Zoom like, I don't know. I feel like I should get a sponsorship deal with them because no, seriously, like 6 hours a day, I'll be doing calls. And so, yeah. So you got to kind of have a proper setup and the whole thing. I mean, honestly, before we kicked off, I was going to tell you, like, listen, I love that mic and tell me more about that. Cause I think that we actually have the same Rode arm.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Love it. Love it.
Yes. It's really good. I just brought it in from the office today. I said, I'm going to figure out how to get into the office. I drove over to the office and I brought back the boom arm because I need to put my hands on the desk. I need to put stuff on the desk. Without it, you can't get the mic up to your mouth and you can't move your hands around. I think a lot of people live on Zoom though, Evan. I want to give you more credit. You do live on Zoom, but a lot of people live on Zoom. You actually are taking the time to make it look good, to make it sound clear for people. I don't think most people who are on Zoom are like that. There's a sense of who you are that is expressed in this design that I'm looking at. The backdrop that has a step and repeat, that has the right image of your logo, right? It's positioned well.
Yeah, but
well.
The whole thing, that's like part of the package, you know? Our job is not only to do it well, but also to make it look good in the process, right? It's one thing where you can just like put lipstick on a pig. Like, we don't do that. not even, never have, never will, right? It's always about the content of like, is this actually any good, right? But you have to make it look good in the process as well. So it's when you marry those things together of content, substance, and yeah, we're going to make money out of this, then that's when things start to make sense. And so that's kind of the whole, yeah, why do we have a proper setup? Why do we have, as sick of a boom arm as you do? Exactly that
reason.
Give me
one other tip for doing Zoom well. What else do you do? Since we're all on Zoom or Skype, we're all doing remote meetings. I'll give you one tip of mine. I found that a lot of the meetings that I was doing were getting very transactional. In fact, there was one woman I paid $500, half an hour phone call, incredibly useful, half an hour. But towards the end, I realized she doesn't care about me. At the end of this call, she'll have forgotten about me. I'm not going to get an email from her in the middle of the night or a week later or a year later saying, I came across this thing that's perfect for you, right? And I'm not going to feel comfortable reaching out to her. There's no connection there. And I realized it's because we got right down to business. And so what I started doing right after that was the first thing I would say had to do with something personal to warm up the conversation, but also in it, I would slide something that would let us know we need to get back to business. And I kind of did that with you without even noticing. So now when I get on Zoom with someone, I just took my four-year-old into school. It's his birthday today. He was strutting out like a peacock. I know we should get back into work, but he was strutting out like a peacock. We should also be that proud, right?
Yes.
I saw you smile right now. A little something, and then it gives them an opportunity to say something personal, but also no, we're not going to get dragged into a long conversation about some freaking four-year-old on this business call. Give me one of your tips.
So my thing is, like we were talking about before, that we vet people with a joke, right? And so there's a lot of loaded things into that of like, why do we do that? Why would we, it's not like a friendly thing. And our calls are short. Like when we have a call of like, if you want to work with us, our call is going to be 10 minutes, right? And so that's why 60-second pitch, you got to nail it. And you've got to nail a joke too, though, right? You got to be a funny guy. You're smiling. So the reason why is because when you can come up with a joke, that tells us a bunch of different things. In the exact same way, and this is kind of like deep level strategy, in the exact same way as an investor is going to be testing you and not telling you about what it is and why I'm asking you these certain questions and what does that mean to me? I'm not going to tell you how I'm processing the information, but you'll only know the test that there was a test when you passed it. And so what the joke tells us is this a funny person? Do they, do they have like a decent sense of humor? Okay. But more importantly, did they prepare? Did they do their homework? And do they seem like a person who is relatable, that, is going to have good interpersonal relationships with other people and work well with others? And so when you have all of those different things, coming into play, then that's kind of how it plays out. And most people don't know a joke off the top of their head. It's like, you have to go out and Google it.
Yeah. Right?
So, I mean, that's part of the test of, can you do your homework?
It does also warm up the conversation a little bit to start off with that, to have a conversation that also includes a little bit of levity in there. By the way, is that a child I hear in the background? I know when you got started,
yeah, didn't you have a 1.5-year-old? So we've got a 1.5-year-old and a 3-year-old daughter. And same here,
I'm with you. We're so lucky times. Our kids are finally in a bubble. We spent so much time. My oldest is 6 years old. He was going nuts. He was just basically in the house all day by himself because school was closed and you couldn't connect with anyone. Finally, we hooked up with 3 other parents and we got our kids a teacher that we hired, who's like, I think she's out of work from the charter system here. And she's teaching them in the garage. My kid loves it. He gets to be with a few kids, not a big class. He gets someone who cares about him. And then at the same time, he still does Zoom with his own class, which is remote now. So he'll do 2 Zoom classes for 30 minutes each. And then he has a real person, a real teacher in person there to help him. And then a few small
friends.
That's
so good. Best of both worlds. I mean, it would be ideal, obviously, if they could go, to school and everything, but the fact that you have that, balance.
This might be even better than school. He said he never wants to go to school again. I hated school. I hated sending my kids to school. imagine if this becomes
a
new
norm.
You
weren't a school kid? I would picture you as being like really good at school.
They wouldn't let me study the things I cared about. It was always stuff that books that I didn't care about. If you love books, having somebody pick a book for you that you don't care about is a time away from a book you really love. Having somebody tell you what's going to be on a test instead of for the love of learning or for the, this is the thing you're going to be able to do with it, that superpower. My wife is amazed. She goes, every time you take up a hobby, you get so lost in all the details of it. She says, where do you even find the time to learn about how to massage? I'm learning how to massage my wife. I got a freaking massage table. I got the whole thing. When you love to learn, you want that outcome. Oh, that's a win. It's a good win.
I'm just thinking of the possibilities. It's
so good.
It's wonderful.
So good. All right. Let's talk about, you said, I wrote this down. I wanted to be number one. How do you become number one at Upwork? How do you stand out, get business? How do you grow there? And then we'll talk about what you did next when you wanted to get people to your own website.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was really the biggest focus that we had was on reputation and just making sure that whenever we're working with somebody, then they're going to get results, right? That we're vetting super heavily that if somebody just has an idea and it's way early on and it's like, I don't know if this is actually going to raise, I don't know if this is going to do well, then like by default, it's if you have any sort of gut feel that's a little shifty on any front, instant, rather not take it on.
Why not just take the money? You're starting a business, you're bootstrapped, hand it over to somebody else. Why not just do it for the money?
But because it's not about the money. It's about making sure that you're always the guy that gets it done. And if you can't get it done or you're not certain that you can get it done, then you'll say, I don't think we can get it done. Because
let me get philosophical with you. I'm sorry. I just have to understand this because I could see in your eyes the significance of this. Wouldn't it make sense for you to take money from people who, or let's not talk about you, for another person, to take money from people who aren't necessarily going to get the results because their business isn't strong enough? No one's going to blame you. Their idea wasn't good. Their business wasn't strong enough. No, you're disgusted by that. Beyond the sense of it's icky, I want to get to the phrasing, the understanding of why that doesn't work for business.
Yeah, it's just you can't build a sustainable business. It was always about, you know, so I talked before about like the snowball effect and how that happened like really, really fast. And we had to grow and add more people and whatnot. Bias was always toward let's not hire more people. Let's keep the team small. And let's just do outstanding work. Let's be the best at what we do because we want to basically be able to say we do it better than anyone else. And so that's like, you know, you have to be very, very careful about who you're working with. But I always wanted to be the people that if you needed the job done and you needed it done perfectly and extremely well, then you're the guys to go to. There, nobody else. You don't need to talk to anybody else. It's them. You need to talk to Unicorn, right? And with that, that was always the mindset. If you end up taking on work that you're just not certain, then what's going to happen as a result? Whether the review is public or not, nobody can guarantee you that you're going to raise capital. Nobody can. And anybody that does, you know, either is lying or doesn't know what they're talking about, has never done it. But you can't be taking on things that just clearly have no fit or they're just too early stage or they need to work things out internally and figure out what they're doing or, you know, just aren't a pleasure to work with for whatever reason. And there's just not that cultural fit. When you are doing your best work with great people that are getting results, then, I mean, I attribute that to how we've done so well so fast, right? And I don't know anybody else who's done anything even remotely close. It's because it's just like focusing your energy on where you're going to have the most impact for people. And I think that has just been really, really helpful for us for whatever reason.
Based on what you're saying, here's what I'm coming away from it with. It's a distraction from the good work that makes you better and build your reputation even more. So regardless of whether people blame you for it or not, yes, it's more money, but it's more money that distracts you. It's like taking on side businesses while you're running a business. If it doesn't
No help. Amount of money is worth a headache. And a headache in the sense of, It just wasn't a good fit because it's always a collaborative thing. It's a very personal thing. I'm writing about your baby. Yeah. I'm telling the story of your baby. And I'm telling you, this is your baby's story and how it all goes and how it all fits together. And basically, like, imagine if you wanted to get your baby into a Gerber baby commercial and you needed to position it correctly. And you've got to have the things that we're directing come out of your mouth impactfully. Yeah. I mean, that's a very personal thing. And if you're not perfectly aligned, then yeah, you end up being a distraction. And there are enough people and businesses out there that are a fantastic fit that, I mean, we turn away like 84% of the people that come our way just because, I mean, I don't know if it's, you know, we need to like filter better or whatever, but it's a lot of making sure that there's an absolutely perfect fit. And if we're not a perfect fit, then we want to try and find that perfect fit and say, okay, maybe you want to check out this, or that. Maybe that's a better fit for you right now. But it's turned into when you focus on being that number one. And I'm not saying the number one in best in the world at one single thing, but when you have a combination of something that you're at least at 85 percentile in three different things, then, and you marry them together, you're crushing it. And that's how it worked for us.
You're kind of inspiring me to want to use some of this in my business, even for the interviews. Like I could imagine, what if we tell people you need to have your setup done at least this well, at least have earphones. If we're buying you a mic, plug it in. And then if someone doesn't have it, just say, I'm sorry, it doesn't look like it's the right fit today. Let's reschedule it. Or if you're too busy now, we can come back years later, or I'll understand if it's never a good fit for you. Maybe we should have these brown M&Ms that we give people. It feels like that's the answer. But it's weird to turn away somebody who's prepared otherwise. And you do that.
Yeah, it's honestly, it catches a lot of people off guard because while a lot of people are a good fit, it's unfortunately a minority and we're not scaled in that fashion. We're not growing in that fashion. I would rather to be, you know, I'd rather be small but extremely effective. Whatever they call them, rock stars, assassins, or I mean, I like to think of us as pirates, right? But
why a pirate?
Say again.
Why a pirate? I wouldn't have thought of you as that. It feels like it's more like crafts people. Why a pirate?
Yeah, we've been called like artisans. I mean, we've been called a lot of things, but pirates. In the same sense that you had Steve Jobs and co as pirates of Silicon Valley, we're kind of pirates of the capital markets.
Great, great movie. Got it. You're helping these smaller businesses do something a little subversive to the main, to the Navy. I get it. I'm overthinking this. Let me get that into
notice somehow.
Upwork, I get. Talk to me about one thing you did to get business beyond word of mouth, to get business directly to your site, to your company.
So yeah, a couple of things. I mean, probably the biggest was most recently that that we got a nice, fantastic write-up from Elaine Pufeld in Forbes, which was just a total, I mean, implosion of the calendar, like could not even handle, right? That was a real big one. But apart from that, we just started doing case study interviews with clients. And it was always like something that was really, really super hard. And we're never able to just extract the, how did this affect you and how did your raise go? And, you know, it just turned into something much like this format where when we just talk through it of like, how did this work out for you? And what were the challenges that you had along the way? And, you know, what effects did you see? And what did your investors say when you showed them, okay, here is what our new pitch is and how we're going to talk through it and what we're going to say and how we're going to act in the room and how all the strategy plays into this. I mean, when we started collecting those case study interviews, it just like really exploded a lot of the stuff that we were doing, particularly email marketing, and just reminded some of the people that we were working with in the past of like, hey, you know, this is some cool stuff of like, yeah, we're doing other stuff with other people and it maybe is a little bit bigger than you might've thought.
So going back to clients, getting case studies from them, reminds them of the work that you did, and then also lets you share their stories with other people who you did work for, again, emphasizing what else you're doing. And then case studies, I do notice, brings people in. And then the Forbes article, I saw that. One of the things I think that stood out for me, I think it was that article that I read, where you could have done any writing, but you decided to, the market that you happen to pick is high value. People value writing for business plans, for pitch decks, much more so than they do for blog posts. I took that away from your story a lot also. And then, you know what? I actually didn't see the case studies on your website. It's one of the things that I went to when I was researching you. Where is that?
You check it out on unicornbusinessplans.com/work. That's where we sort of drop all of our...
Oh, see our work. There's a button right there. Portfolio, got it. Logistics, got it.
Exactly. See, so that's where we house all of our case study videos. And it's, you know, very similar to how we're talking through, you know, some of this stuff today, where it's just, here's some of the founders and here's some of the stuff that they've done. And I mean, some people it's like crazy stuff that like, if I told you, you would not believe me. Like if I told you that, one client, he came to us, second time founder, had an exit under his belt. He exited a previous business for like $25 million, comes back to a new business and says, all right, now I want to raise some money. Goes to all of the investors who invested in his business the previous round, who had already made money for them. He pitches them and they're like, no, I don't really like this. We end up working together. He goes back to them, all these investors who said no. And he ends up within 3 weeks with multiple term sheets, $2.25 million, oversubscribed round, and just job done. Like if I told you this, like $2.25 million within 3 weeks, you wouldn't believe me. But when he talks about it, how it actually went down, I mean, then it's, well, how can you, you know?
Who is this?
So that's it, man.
Oh no, who's the person? I'm on the work section.
Brandon
right now.
Metcalf.
I saw Place that. Technology. $10 million. Am I right? Is my memory right on that? Sorry? Yeah.
Say again?
I thought it was, is that the guy who raised $10 million? I remember scrolling through this and seeing it.
No, it'd be 2.25, oversubscribed.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? The reason that I didn't notice that the CR work was on the homepage top right is because it looks like a button. And I assume the button is contact us or schedule a call or start here. And I was looking through the navigation bar. It was just the way I was thinking. Let's talk about revenue then for your business. What's the revenue?
So as we stand right now, we're at a run rate north of 2 million.
And last year, 2019, how'd you do?
Last year was about 1.2.
So you're going to do better this year after the, you know, the crisis? You are.
That's where we're at right now. I think that we'll probably actually break that number. But yeah, it was one of those things where, I don't know, right place, right time, right product.
Yeah, why? I'm noticing some businesses are doing much, much better. I've got a friend who's a VC here. He says, some of his portfolio companies are doing gangbusters. Others are completely damaged from this.
Exactly.
Why? I'm trying to understand the pattern. Why did your business grow?
I think we ended up growing just because we had already established that reputation of like when you need to raise money and when things get harder, that's when it's more competitive for you as a founder. Like you have to raise your game because if you look at it, like what happened in terms of COVID, all of the VCs, well, not all, but by and large, like they thought they had 100 million. Now that's 50. And so they're not writing, you know, smaller checks as a result, they're writing half the number of checks. And so that means that group of, you know, start like the capital is more competitive. And so if you need to, you know, raise from them, then you got to bring your A game. And so that's where some of it came from. And the other side was in March, there was like a big sell-off in the market. I don't know if you saw that, but yeah, it was like down 40%, right?
Yeah.
So, what ended up happening, what we found out from just over and over, clients were telling us this, like, we keep hearing from investors that all of these private individuals, high net worths and whatnot, they just sold all of their stock. They exited everything. And that's why the stock market, you know, went down by 40%, because they were getting out and turning everything into cash. And now they're like, I don't even want to touch public markets. I want to see what the private individual companies are going to do, because that's where the opportunity is. And that's where we're cutting checks. Show me some good deals, because we are writing like major checks for dollars. So
it does feel like the public markets are overvalued and smaller companies are undervalued, because we're just kind of scared of the future. Actually, I don't know why I feel like they're undervalued.
It's kind of that feeling of like, you know, is COVID real? And if I try and come with too aggressive of a valuation, am I going to get torpedoed on the basis of that? It's people are more skittish. And so the effects of perception are really, really powerful on that side.
All right. For anyone who's interested, who wants to go check out this website that I've been talking about, it's unicornbusinessplans.com. You start out with business plans, but you've expanded way beyond there, right? I'm seeing right on the homepage, pitch decks, business plans, financial models, anything you need in order to raise money. It's at unicornbusinessplans.com. Do I need to tell people that I don't get a commission from talking about it? No, they know it. Unicornbusinessplans.com. Here's what I do get paid for talking about, and I love them. SEM Rush. I was using my own account to research today's guest, and I do that for other guests too. If you want to try the tool for free to figure out how you can get more traffic to your site, come up with ideas for what to write about, places to do some advertising, and frankly, even for social media, to do it intelligently, I've got software that you can use for free. Don't even need a credit card, but it's a temporary option because they're just testing me out. We didn't even have time to create a landing page on their site. I'm just going to tell you, go to my site, which will redirect you to them and plug in all the information you need to use it for free. Here it is. It's mixergy.com/SEMrush. That's mixergy.com/SEMrush. And of course, if you want to create a quiz, a calculator of any kind, really, if you're offering something, let people see how much it would cost if they wanted to buy it. And this tool can go viral if you want to use it for yourself, again, for free. This is you trying it out and seeing if it makes sense. Go to outgrow.co/mixergy, outgrow.co/mixergy. All right.
I totally just did, by the way.
Thanks, Evan. I'm going to let them know.
I think they already got it from the tag, but yeah.
That's right. But I'll tell them that it happened within this interview. How cool. You know what? This is one of my favorite things to do. Clip out the guest talking about my sponsor. I always tell my guests, talk about it negative, positively. I don't care. But when I clip it out for the sponsor, even if it's negative, it feels like there's a real conversation here.
Not okay, a then let me tell you about my experience of trying to build exactly what Outgrow is trying to sell.
Oh yeah, tell me.
I mean, I sat for probably 6 hours trying to figure out the. I can't swear, by the way.
Do it. You can. You did already.
All right. I sat for like 6 hours trying to figure out the fucking math of like, how do we,
right,
you know, build this whole calculator inside of a type form, which is not designed for that at all. Super hardcore, like bad use case.
But it feels like it could, because you could do if this, then that. If they tell me this and they do that, then we take them this path.
But you can't pass the variable. And if you want to, then you can't pass multiple variables. So it's like you... I want you to fit into my square hole, but you're just a round peg and we're just not a good fit. You know?
Yeah. So, like, and these calculators are amazing when they're done right. It's just, you give people the answer they want.
I've had this for like the longest time. And
I told them, I didn't even know it existed. How did you guys not even reach out to me? If nothing else, I would say this to anyone in my audience. If you create something just interesting, just first of all, send it to me. Say, Andrew, look what we created so that I could talk about it. And number two, just send it out to other people. Just say, here's a cool thing. I just want you to show I'm a maker. I'm not looking to get you to buy it. I just want you to know about it. Send it out a little bit. You know who tried to do this with me? I wish he'd done it better. Imad. He had this company, sold it. He created this company, this bank, Mercury, for startups. It looks, I didn't even know it looked good. I just found out about it the other day. I tweeted out. I said, look, I want to interview Imad. He's created Mercury. Anyone use this thing? The love tweets that I got for it. Go look at my Twitter stream. You'll see. He should have told me. He should have said, Andrew, I want you to know this is my new project. And you could see people then went to sign up just because I tweeted about the freaking thing.
Wow.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. It looks one person, Ruben Gomez, one of my past guests, said, Andrew, you're not going to understand it until you see it. I'm just going to screencast me paying out of my Mercury bank account. I see his freaking bank account, the money, his bank information, his login, the whole freaking thing he's showing me because he trusts me. Now I get it. Now I understand why Ruben's on it. All right. I better run. Evan, thank you so much for doing this. Let's close it out with unicornbusinessplans.com, guys. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Evan.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
Bye.